And I hate roles on LinkedIn, A, because the LinkedIn algorithm changes all the time. So it's very difficult to follow a rule that is going to stay consistent. I'd say the only rule on LinkedIn really is showing up and being you and authentic and being somebody that's willing to share their story versus just their sales or their course and not giving value. I'd say that's really the only, and is that even a rule? It's more the directions that I would give you to using LinkedIn. You know, almost like a craving that your audience has, trying to think of a time when your audience had such high engagement with a post, and how do you get back to that point and leave them wanting more?
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to a new episode of Life After Corporate, my friends. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the best advice on how to launch and grow a profitable and sustainable coaching or consulting business. And today we're talking about how to break the rules around LinkedIn and how to make LinkedIn work for you without you having to spend a lot of time, effort, energy on working LinkedIn. And our guest today is Erin Anderson. Erin is a LinkedIn marketing strategist, a hiring specialist, and speaker based in New York City. She focuses and consults on LinkedIn branding and content strategy, specifically around how organic marketing attracts traffic to business owners to reach their target audiences. In addition to that, Erin speaks about the power of hiring and hires through LinkedIn for companies to recruit the best talent for their small businesses, firms, and agencies with a strong emphasis on culture. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Erin Anderson.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today.
So Erin, tell us a little bit about your Life After Corporate story. You know, not everybody thinks about entrepreneurship, you know, out of college and that, oh, I'm going to launch my own business. So how did you come to the realization that business ownership was really where it's at for you?
Yeah. So I, after business school, I started my career off in corporate banking and also working on the investment side of a commercial real estate company, and unfortunately experienced the general stereotype work environments of just kind of finance in general, but obviously more specific banking. And through that, it endured quite a few years of both verbal and sexual harassment in different companies that I worked at, and really decided that it wasn't for me and that it wasn't worth the culture. And I wasn't having a direct awareness on, speaking of like clients, for example, if I wasn't having a direct impact or if I was working with really large companies, how could I be more aware and be more present with clients on a one-on-one basis and see the impact that I was having on their lives? That's definitely something that I was missing. And I knew that I wanted to go off on my own, having been in business school and then studying different types of business. Although I was great at finance and accounting, I really felt like I wasn't using that more HR cultural side that I wanted to make that impact in the long run. So I left in 2019 and started my business full-time in 2020.
And let's tell the real story of what the startup life was like for you. Did you immediately know exactly what you were going to focus on when you started your business, or have you had some twists and turns along the way?
Oh, lots of twists and turns. I'd say lots of pivoting. I'd say the one thing that I never really listened to from a variety of people was that I had to, you know, niche down and only focus on one area, or something could be confusing. And I really believe the past couple of years why things have been as successful as they are and why I've grown tremendously as a business is because I didn't do that. I more made sure that everything fell under one umbrella. When it comes to LinkedIn, there's obviously a lot of different types of companies and people I can help. And so listening to the market, listening to demand of what people are asking for versus just what I had gone into it initially with was really big for me. But yeah, it's a grind. I mean, just starting off and being on your own, I was 2020 in the house and couldn't leave. So I think it made it a little bit easier. But moving into now, really finding that balance and diving into working with organizations as well, and knowing when you need to niche down for what you enjoy versus just a branding perspective, I feel is really important.
There are so many gems in what you just shared, not only just the niching down, but also finding the joy, listening to your intuition. You know, where is there demand in the marketplace versus trying to create something and then sell it to people? Bring so much more ease and flow and joy into the whole entrepreneurial journey rather than just muscling and hustling your way through. I know I've been super impressed with you. We've had a couple of opportunities for our paths to cross. We brought you into Elevate Network as a speaker, and that session was phenomenal. So thank you very much for that. And it prompted me to want to ask you to share your wisdom with our audience today. And we started our pre-recording conversation with about breaking the rules. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you mean about that when applied to LinkedIn. What do you mean by breaking the rules around LinkedIn?
Yes. So most people, when they come to me for advice on LinkedIn or they're in a session like we had with Elevate, they're used to maybe challenges that they participated in or a short form course that they purchased that gave them a few rules to follow. And I hate rules on LinkedIn, A, because the LinkedIn algorithm changes all the time. So it's very difficult to follow a rule that is going to stay consistent. I'd say the only rule on LinkedIn really is showing up and being you and authentic and being somebody that's willing to share their story versus just their sales or their course and not giving value. I'd say that's really the only, and is that even a rule? It's more the directions that I would give you to using LinkedIn. I always tell people it's more about figuring out how LinkedIn is going to work for you and your business. What is going to get you excited and feel natural, not forced? So many people are still ingrained. They can't get out of that mindset of like a course they took at one point. You have to post this many times per week. And then they just say, I can't do it. And then they never really engage on LinkedIn again. So I would really encourage people to just show up as them and think about what would make it easy for you to show up on LinkedIn, even just once a week or once every 2 weeks, and just be consistent and want, you know, almost like a craving that your audience has, you know, trying to think of a time when your audience had such high engagement with a post, and how do you get back to that point and leave them wanting more?
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. The LinkedIn algorithms are always changing. You know, LinkedIn likes video. It doesn't like video. It likes long form posts. You have too many hashtags. You don't have enough hashtags. You tag people in your posts. You don't. I mean, it's so, so, so confusing. And you're preaching to the choir here, because my clients know it's all about consistency and showing up and being seen and heard. And whatever that rhythm is that works for you, works for you. It's just a matter of using some of the different tools to make sure that you're kind of touching on all the bases and making sure that your clients and future clients have the opportunity to discover you. So you've talked about using LinkedIn for hiring. So most of the listeners to this podcast are just getting started, so they might not be ready to hire. But how can they work on establishing their personal brand or their company brand so that when they're ready to hire, they're already cultivating people who have been watching them, who have already identified, ooh, I'd love to work for that person, or I'd love to work for that company. What are some of the secrets to being an in-demand employer?
Sure. So I like the term secrets specifically because if we're thinking about roles and how we can change that language, I think secrets is a good term to use when it comes to profile branding specifically. So leaving content aside for the moment, when we think of a profile that we land on, what typically makes you stay? It's different for all of us. And, you know, the biggest thing, I was speaking with a firm today on this, is you have to look approachable. And when we do branding photo shoots, sometimes photographers recommend different stances or different ways that we should pose. And if you have an upcoming branding shoot, which I know a lot of new or maybe some entrepreneurs that are just a few years in are doing quite frequently, or they have something coming up, thinking about what are your LinkedIn pictures going to be, not just your website, not just your social media or on other platforms, but specifically on LinkedIn, how are you showing up looking confident? Because people want to hire confident people, but also how do you look like somebody that I want to call and have a conversation with? That's really important. So looking powerful, but also looking like somebody that you would want to meet up with in person, not just virtually. I think that's really important. And so that's A. The second thing I would say is through your content and through your profile, how are you showing up with your company values that reflect your own? A lot of the times when I work with an organization that is looking to hire, sometimes even at a corporate level, and they tell me, you know, we really need to get active on our company page, which yes, right? We think of the large corporations of the world that are constantly promoting sustainability. That's something that people discuss in an interview because it's a shared value. But if we're a smaller firm, how are we also showing not just our values, but also our team culture? And so activating and using your company page, but also they're always looking at like C-suite leadership or upper management. And so in addition to being approachable, using your about section to talk about your career journey, because that's relatable. People can relate at some point. We talked about like the beginning steps of entrepreneurship in the beginning, right? But also thinking about, you know, how did you transition? How does that relate to them? And what is it not only that you value, but what are also your interests outside of work? How are you getting involved with the community? These are things that I always advocate during hiring to make sure that are in place. Otherwise, we don't seem approachable, or we don't seem like a real person. People should be feeling like they're applying to work with people, not just an organization.
I think that's so true and such a great insight that there's a lot of people who post on LinkedIn and it's pure promo. And it's all the shiny professional shots and in the long gowns or the beautiful outfits and the perfect scene. And what people really relate to are the real life trials, tribulations, victories, and values. Victories, right? And values. Right. So using your LinkedIn profile and particularly your content to reflect that. And so what are some of the mistakes that you've seen people make on their LinkedIn profile that you feel really hurts them rather than helps them in the long run on their profile or in their content?
So the first thing is anything promotional. Like that's just not what works on LinkedIn. I always compare it to the people who went viral during the pandemic and developed like these followers briefly and then tried to use that following base to then promote a sudden course that they developed because now they had an audience. And if you look back at those LinkedIn influencers, if you will, they may still have the following, but they don't have the business or they don't have the help, right? So if those people have gone back to corporate, I've seen really large influencers on LinkedIn who've been employed for months. And if you look further into that, it's, well, wait a minute. What happened here? They have this huge following base. They've asked for help, whether it's a business or a career professional, and their community isn't engaging. And really what that leads to is that they also didn't reciprocate and help in return. And so going into this idea of LinkedIn is really a reciprocation platform. So I see a lot of people get high engagement and then they don't participate with other people in their network that are supporting them. That's huge. And what you'll see is just that less, you know, over time, less and less people will gravitate towards those posts. And then eventually they have a follower base, but no engagement on their posts. So I would say reciprocate. I usually tell people to set aside about 30 minutes a week to be really intentional, at least with looking into your organization and then other organizations' posts, people's posts, and then finding a time that it's easy. Like I have the LinkedIn app and every time I'm on the subway, I see what are people posting? Where can I provide value? So not ignoring engagement. Don't just post, make sure to reciprocate.
It's a relationship. You're 100%. Establishing virtual relationships and there's reciprocity involved. So I love that. When you mentioned before a LinkedIn influencer, is that like a technical term of a label people get as LinkedIn influencer?
So not by LinkedIn necessarily. They've changed it over time. Like there's LinkedIn top voices, and that's not so much what I'm referring to. More, you know, these people that have like 50, 100,000 followers, right? That worked really hard to get there, but then for lack of a better term, kind of got lazy with it. They stopped engaging with their community. And so they're not really using it to their advantage because they're not providing value. And, you know, even thinking about after you create a post, the two things that I always ask myself is this relatable and something that somebody actually wants to engage with? And two, did I provide value? And I feel that most people don't ask themselves that after they write a post, and they just post and they think, well, it's a great picture, like you were saying earlier. And, you know, I talked about a story that happened today, but how did we relate that back to our audience collectively? Can somebody engage in this conversation? Because that situation is something that likely 90% of people looking at this have also encountered at some point. You know, LinkedIn's a community. How are we bringing it back together to everybody? How are we starting a conversation? You know, the last thing I'll say is a mistake I see is when it comes to value, it doesn't always have to be. I think people get in this mindset of, well, I have to provide a freebie or a free consult, or I have to provide these tips. And while those work really well, value can simply be inspiration. So encouraging people to leave corporate and start their business, for example, I mean, that can provide more value to somebody that's kind of at the edge of potentially escaping corporate than your freebie or your consult. You know, maybe that's down the line, but how can you inspire somebody so deeply to take the next step?
That's a great point. And leads to my LinkedIn post I was going to make this week. So thanks for that. Yeah. And you mentioned business pages, and that's been a mystery, especially for us as small business owners. Uh-huh. You know, do we need a business page? What's the value of a business page? What's the difference between our business page and our personal profile? And why is it important to have a business page?
So it's important for credibility, number one. When I work with organizations that when we start to hire and I look into their company page and they don't even have the company tagged on their profile, I think it begins, you know, people look at this and like, is this even a credible firm or a company? And sometimes they have the page, but it's not even tagged. And so A, for credibility purposes, you look very efficient when you have a logo. B, it's a place for all of your employees to form a community because everybody can tag where it is that they work. So even if you're a small firm, everybody should have that on their profile currently working there. There's a lot of new features that LinkedIn is catering to company pages. So what we can currently do on personal, they are moving more and more in the direction of like companies being able to message one another. And, you know, when it comes to like types of content, when you're hiring, again, we think, you know, if somebody is going to like the L'Oreal or the Coca-Cola of the world, and they want to see what's going on from an innovation perspective at the company, how can you show what are recent events? What is it like to be an employee at your company? And so from a hiring perspective, I'd say community. And then going back to the credibility aspect is how are you all showing up as a firm in your banner? Like when you go to your personal profile, then you just have a photo of you. But when we look at a company page, if you've built this team, right? Think about people that start off as a solopreneur and built a 20-person agency. How are we all showing up? People want to know who is it that's working at the organization. And lastly, I would just say, how are you making sure that you are visible in every single way? Maybe you went to a networking event or attended a virtual workshop and somebody remembered your company name and not your first or last name, and that's how they find you. Just making sure you're consistent across all platforms is really important.
That's a great point. And even when people are hiring virtual talent, you still have a team. Right. And it's a great opportunity to introduce your team to your audience, you know, who you're working with, because your team will connect with your future clients, with your existing clients. And I've heard about the new capabilities that some of the new capabilities that LinkedIn is offering pages that are different. And they were surprising. One was that if you attach your event, your LinkedIn event, mm-hmm. to your LinkedIn page versus your personal profile, it actually gets a little bit more oomph as of this recording.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
with your audience. More people see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Another feature that just came out, I want to say between 2 to 5 days ago, is you can actually now click a button under the job section where you can express interest in a company, and then that company is made aware that you're interested in working for them. So again, I would say this is maybe dependent on down the line if you're looking to eventually hire. But, you know, depending on where you speak or like think of a panel, for example, and somebody's in the audience that's really passionate and shares the same passion for you in that subject area, and then they're able to say that in the future they're interested in working for your organization. I think that can get quite complicated on the corporate level with the amount of interest, but I think it could be pretty life-changing for a small business that instead of always having to go through the hiring process, they already have people that are ready and interested in working for their company.
So let's talk about attracting the right talent, because even if you're attracting freelance talent or 1099 talent or bringing on your very first hire, what are some of the best practices for using LinkedIn to attract the right employees?
Yeah, so I'd say across the board, this is the big trend. Indeed talks about it as well, but I'd say it's very important on LinkedIn because your personal profile is attached to it, as well as your team, is coming at a place from here's what we're going to provide you versus automatically this is what we need from you. So thinking about a job posting when like the qualifications are at the top and immediately it's like, okay, I have this. And then at the bottom, there's like this generic summary of here's what the company is. But instead, what if you pivoted and you actually included what you're offering the employee up front and underneath that, the qualifications. And it's really not changing the quality of the candidate. In fact, it's likely somebody that's going to be the best cultural fit because they're being forced to read about the company and they're not going to apply if it's not a good fit. So it works in both directions in the sense that the employee feels more valued, but at the same time, you're getting people that really feel aligned with the company's values. I just finished hiring for a bookkeeping firm and they hired me to hire one person. And we actually found four that they're going to be spreading out over probably the next year to two. And so why, when I interview them, it always usually goes back to like, we could really connect with the job posting and not just pulling the about or like the mission or the values off of your website, but really telling us and uncovering what is it like to work with you. Maybe you are a business of all moms that work virtually and you really appreciate that type of candidate and you understand that they have like little ones running around, for example. And if that's who you want on your team, just being really, really transparent, that's where I find the best fits that actually last for a long time at a company.
And so once you make your posting on LinkedIn, and I've only done this once, and I got so scared, I walked away. I was like, I can't deal with this. I need to go for referrals. Is that so many people click the box that aren't qualified, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you put your story up front, and it feels overwhelming with the number of responses from people who are interested. So what is your recommendation for making the job search, the employee search or the freelancer search easier on LinkedIn when you don't have 20 hours a week to interview people, aside from hiring you?
Yeah, I was going to say that's usually why people hire me, but you know, you're still going to get a good number of applications this way, but it's better than not. And so usually I set filters. And so instead of just posting the job posting, there's an area at the bottom where you can ask specific questions and they have to check yes or no. And I have a lot of those questions. I usually see on a job posting like just two or three, and it might be like, are you a US citizen, for example, or are you 18 plus years of age? Because they're considered suggested filtered questions. I never use the suggested filters. I get really more specific. So I will look into a job posting and I will say, you know, what are the absolute qualifications? And then what are the preferred? I separate those and then they have to answer the question accordingly. And then I'll set the filter that, like, for example, if they don't have these preferred qualifications, we're not even looking to move forward and they will receive an automatic rejection. The other thing I'll say is, like, usually when going through the candidates, depending on how much effort they put into it, like, did they even miss put attaching a resume? Or if we required a cover letter or a video, have they reached out? Have they looked at our profile? Have they connected? Like, those are things that stand out to me automatically, but I would highly suggest using those filtered questions, because, you know, if you're not using those, you could be getting, I've seen the craziest things. I've seen like a COO applied like an executive assistant position, for example. And it's like, okay, are you actually interested? Are you just out of work? Are you looking for a filler? It's not aligned with where they are in their career, and being very cognizant of that for sure. But yeah, use the filtered questions. Also, reach out and message these candidates before actually scheduling an interview to clarify anything. You know, if you see that their resume maybe does not exactly align with their application and you think there might be a mistake, I just go ahead and message them, because to schedule the time for an interview and then, you know, feel like you don't even know if they have the basic qualifications, that's another thing. Culturally, I'll say make sure to go on their profiles and look at their content. I can't tell you how many times I have seen somebody apply for an in-person position, or they're out of a certain state for hiring purposes, and according to their content, they just posted that they would like to move in the next month or something along those lines. And it's like, okay, this was they looked like the best candidate on paper, but look at what they're engaging with on LinkedIn. It's quite telling.
That's so interesting. And there was so much richness in what you said there. First of all, I didn't know that LinkedIn had automated filters on the job profile listings, that you could filter Yes. people out with an automatic rejection. That reduces the burden. And when I did my post, this must have been last year, early summer, late spring, it was for a social setter. And people just kind of clicked the box with interest when clearly there was, you know, send a video.
Sure.
Send a video with your answer to these three questions. And no one sent a video.
Yeah, they didn't finish reading the post. Like having at the very bottom, you know, I remember I had an operations firm one time, and it was like, if you've gotten to this point in the application, please send me a private LinkedIn message with your favorite type of taco. It was very random, but we would know very clearly if they've even read to the bottom of it. It reminds me of, you know, tests in college where professors would, you know, if you didn't even read the top of the directions, you failed the test. And so similarly, depending especially on the role, how detailed oriented are these candidates to make sure that they are going to do the job well? And keeping in mind, it's not just how they look on paper. It's so important. I see a lot of firms tell me like, I need to hire immediately. And it's like, okay, but do you want an immediate hire? Because that's more of a contractor. And then we can use a contractor until we fulfill the right person versus just hiring to hire. I see this a lot. It, you know, as far as timeline goes, if this is something you're looking to do within the next year, it's about 2 to 3 months, because we need to post, sometimes we have to repost to find the right person. And then there's an interview process. And don't forget, candidates need to give 2 to 4 weeks notice at their last position. And it takes a while. And I just get people that contact me, you know, maybe 30 days after they should have. Accountants and bookkeepers are huge. Like, I'll just wait till after tax season. And then they find out like, oh, we could have been hiring during tax season to, you know, get us up to speed for Q2. So, you know, just be really mindful of hiring times and, you know, holiday seasons. When are people in the job market? Summer tends to slow down a little bit, right? Thinking about March is always the hottest time. This is the time where you see the most applicants. September's huge. People going back to work. Summer's over. I've hired a lot in December. Sometimes people, even though it's a holiday season, they do want to get to, they want to land the position and they want to negotiate before January begins. So something else to consider.
Great, great Tommy advice there. I'm still stuck on the idea of video and whether or not video is a good idea, or what are the benefits to having someone record a video versus just looking at the paperwork. What do you learn by having someone answer, I'm assuming answer 2 or 3 questions on a video or indicate their interest in the role. Why is that better, different? What do you think about video responses to job postings?
Yeah. So just, you know, like any business owner, when you have a client, right, you have to adapt to the client's needs and client preferences. And sometimes clients say, well, I've always done this and it's produced good results. I usually share that this process is sometimes a little bit different. I think it's very industry dependent. For example, if we think of like engineering and sometimes financial fields where people are not as maybe passionate about client relations and showing up in front of the client, and that's not part of their position in the first place, I wouldn't recommend a video. I know it shows team culture, but sometimes those people rather just have a conversation than be recorded themselves. Sometimes they're a little bit more introverted and they don't, you know, a lot of the times the response I get is like, this is so weird. Like, I don't, you know, versus an extrovert might get on video and they're like, oh, this is my chance to shine and show them who I am. And they think it's better than an interview. You know, if we're thinking of like the world of public relations and news and media, absolutely, video is great. If you know they're going to be in front of clients all the time, it's a great, I would say, like a filtering technique. But when I see these like financial and accounting firms ask for a video, I know it's painful for those candidates who aren't even going to be in front of a client, you know? So thinking about who is it that this person is going to have to be in front of? And you never also want to make a candidate feel uncomfortable right off the bat.
Those are great points. And made me think of, you know, you need to think about the DISC profile or the strengths that you want to hire for in this candidate, because there's inherent bias in using video. Right. If you use video, then you're automatically filtering for the extroverts, for the people who are, you know, high on decision making, high on influence, versus those that might be more introverted or focused on relationship building or focused on detail and data. So that's very interesting as well. Let's talk about culture. You mentioned culture, team culture, and I know you're a huge fan of establishing corporate culture on LinkedIn. Yes. What does that mean to establish a corporate culture on LinkedIn?
Yeah, it's showing the reflection of what you represent as an individual, right? So we think of like very large CEOs down to small business owners themselves. Your content and your engagement should absolutely reflect your values. And again, not going back into rules, but preferences on LinkedIn, maybe every single piece of content that you create and a comment, as long as it's what I call meaty, right? We have at least three lines of valuable information that we're sharing or value, that it represents who you are as a business owner, as who you are in the organization. If you're, you know, if you're not doing that consistently, or if you feel like your content or your engagement isn't, then I would be fearful that maybe you're not showing up as a thought leader on LinkedIn. And thought leader and culture, they're, you know, I mean, if not, they're kind of one thing for the other. So when we think of where LinkedIn is going in the future, it's all about thought leadership. They're starting these new AI articles now, and they're asking people's opinion on different questions and then promoting them with LinkedIn community badges and top voice. And this is where LinkedIn is going. They want to hear from thought leaders. And so it doesn't matter if the, you know, like I'm thinking of like the new CEO of Starbucks really shows up and he shows with his value and he's going to be a barista for once a month, right? Like thinking about how he's aligning with that and how many, I'm sure there was a strong uptick in the number of applications after seeing that. So how can we, as small business owners, represent that through our content and maybe what we're doing in everyday life, or like what we're sharing with our community, or how we're getting involved and client results in a way that people say like, wow, I want to work for this company, or I want to be a client of this company because of the way that they treat others.
Thoughtful considerations. And I love the thought leadership piece, because I've noticed that as well, is that LinkedIn is really creating the tools and outlets for people to express thought leadership with LinkedIn audio, with what is this new LinkedIn, the AI tool that you mentioned, what's that called?
Yes, there's now AI articles, and a lot of people who create content, like I've received emails from LinkedIn asking me to participate in conversations. I'd say the more active you are, the more active and the more engagement you get on your posts and your following will really determine that. But there's a lot of articles that people are starting to engage with based on their category, and you can follow those categories, but sometimes you'll actually be notified now. For example, like Erin contributed to this AI article, and there's like some type of value there. And obviously that goes out to not just your connections, but everybody's able to see that that's looking at that AI article. So now, you know, you're expanding your network and potential clients. I'm very careful, like when I'm sharing anything about an AI article, I'll say, like, for example, like as a career, I also do career transition. So if I'm in the career transition topic, I will state who I am coming from a place of, like, I'm not just commenting to comment, I'm saying this as a thought leader in this space, which is really important. If I'm commenting on culture, I make sure to come from a standpoint of like, what is this talking about, like a nonprofit or a for-profit or a small business? So LinkedIn is really leading into how can we get people that are heavily immersed in these different types of industries with a strong passion to make a change by contributing to these articles. And in return, even though they're doing this at no cost, how are we promoting it to the community? And so as that continues to grow and people are awarded community badges and LinkedIn top voice, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like going back to that Starbucks CEO, I'm pretty sure he's a LinkedIn top voice again, because of his participation on LinkedIn and his initiatives from a cultural standpoint. Those are the conversations he's likely getting involved in too. And that's just another piece to show, you know, how impressive your culture is of your organization.
Yes. I love that there's an opportunity, and LinkedIn is putting the algorithm behind giving you exponentially greater visibility through thought leadership on commenting on these articles. Where do we find these articles, by the way?
Yeah. So LinkedIn they're sending emails out. You might also get notifications. They are, sometimes you'll start to see it at the top of your feed if you're being invited to participate. So it's being released out slowly. If you're familiar with how LinkedIn rolls out new features, it gives like it'll almost give a trial to a subset of people, and they'll see like, how does this work? Mm-hmm. And if it performs well, then they expand it to the masses. And so I received an email. You may, if they're releasing it to the masses, it'll appear at the very top when you open your LinkedIn. I do ironically see it more on the app. I don't know if that's on purpose. But if you don't have the LinkedIn app, I would try that. And if your profile is heavily branded with these keywords in certain areas, then they may target you a little bit more, and then you could get recognized. And the more that you contribute, obviously, the better. So, you know, if you're starting to get those notifications, look into what other people are contributing and see if you can contribute as well.
So thank you. There's been so much value in this conversation here today, Erin. And in summary, your personal brand is reflected on your LinkedIn profile. Your company values, your company culture is also reflected on your LinkedIn company page. If you are promoting yourself incessantly, you're actually doing yourself a disservice and will eventually lose followers and lose connections and probably instruct the algorithm not to promote your posts and your content to quite so many people because no one's engaging with your posts. That's how all that works, right? But there is a tremendous opportunity for thought leadership, that LinkedIn is the thought leader platform. Most entrepreneurs I know, all of my clients are thought leaders in their spaces. So this is a tremendous opportunity for you to use LinkedIn as a platform, promote your thought leadership, promote your values, and also use that as jumping off to say, hey, I'm hiring. I'm expanding my team. I know I was getting notices all of last week on LinkedIn. Are you hiring? Are you hiring? And I'm not hiring right now, but it's a great, great opportunity for you to engage with potential new employees as well. And thank you for sharing those best practices on recruiting and finding the right employees and talent. Appreciate you, Erin. And if people want to get in touch with you, is there anything that you want to share with our audience today? And what is the best way to get in touch with you if someone wants to engage you to recruit their next employee?
Sure. I'm obviously on LinkedIn the most out of any other platform. And just to comment on that, with everything that is going on with TikTok and the uncertainty of other types of social media, and then also the stories that I've heard about Instagram, for example, and people actually losing access to their accounts. I think LinkedIn is the one platform that's been really consistent and actually promoting people that are gaining a following. And so I'm primarily on LinkedIn. I'm at Your Brand Networker. My last name in Anderson is S-E-N. So if you can't find me, that might be why. But yeah, I'd love for you to follow me, connect, send me a message, and I'd love to support each other on LinkedIn.
And that's Erin, E-R-I-N. And we'll have your LinkedIn profile linked in a show notes. And Erin, thank you so much for your generosity and sharing your wisdom with the Life After Corporate listeners today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's it for now, my friends. Go out there and look at your LinkedIn profile. Create a business page if you don't have one. Make sure you're focusing on the reciprocity of the platform and not just looking to receive, but also looking to give good support and good advice, and use it to establish yourself as a thought leader. It's probably, I know it is, the best platform out there for thought leaders to get their messages heard. So we will see you next time, my friends, on the next episode of Life After Corporate. Until then, have a fabulous time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.